Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. An eventful weekend, as always, in Lakerland. First, Lakers get the win to move back to 500. We recorded a special bonus episode just to celebrate the occasion, but then dip right back below. In a game where LeBron James returns out of nowhere, but the Chicago Bulls and Patrick Beverly hand the Lakers a pretty resounding defeat. And so Lakers end the weekend in ninth place in the Western Conference with a 37-38 record. I normally wouldn't ask to put parameters on topics on a pod, but we got three pods to record before our next game. And so my request is just for this one, let's push standings talk in particular off to other ones, because we're going to have to sit with that game for a few days, D. And so is the Lakers coaching staff, and we're going to play that team again. So I think that the lessons from on court, like, really want to dive into that between now and the next game, because this was a loss that if we learn the lessons from it that we need to learn, we can really move on. Or I'm sorry, we can really be in a good spot. But with Chicago coming up again and Minnesota coming up after that, if we don't learn those lessons, we're actually in a bit of a dangerous stretch.
We're in a dangerous stretch regardless.
Sure.
So I've been expressing a certain amount of frustration in general, like it's been bubbling. Yesterday's game might have been one of the more anger-inducing games that I've watched from the Lakers in a while. I just thought, for all of the times where you feel like they shot themselves in the foot in whatever way, whether it was the second half of the New Orleans game where they won was like a perfect example of this, where it's just like they just sort of stopped caring, and that sort of vibe carried over into future games as well. And you're just like, look, don't you understand the stakes of the season? Like, you can't keep coming out flat every single game. That resolved itself mostly, but against the Bulls, Mike, I thought that there were some lineup decisions and some general, like, this is how I'm going to play within the structure of those lineups, that I thought the Lakers did it to themselves yesterday a lot. They played a really sort of small bench group with three guards, and then with Vanderbilt playing power forward and then Wenyen at center, against a lineup that was anchored by Andre Drummond at center, who's going to give Wenyen issues just because of his size and bulk. And then Patrick Williams is like one of the other big wings. And then DeRozan, I think, might have been in the game at that point as well. And so there was the one group that the Bulls actually play with size. Right. They started like basically a three guard lineup with DeRozan at power forward. So that group didn't have size. And the Lakers played one of their bigger groups that they could play. LeBron is back. Austin Reeves is a starting role with Dennis, I guess. But then the Lakers went small. And to start the second quarter, Mike, that group got blown off. Like, they got blown off the court. And that changed the tenor of the entire...
We got outscored by 12 points in the first 5:30 of the second quarter.
Yeah, and AD came in right at the end of that, Mike, but it's just like the damage was already done, and the Lakers lost... They lost the tone of the game at that point, and Chicago never let it go, to their credit. And the Lakers never got back into it. They trailed by three at the end of the first quarter in ways where even in the second half of that quarter, they didn't play very well. But I thought, oh, well, they're in it. All they have to do is turn things around a little bit, shift up these things. And they went further in the other direction. And I was so frustrated by just some of the lineups that were out there and then how those lineups played. Like, they just didn't play hard enough either, I thought, particularly in the backcourt.
Yeah, so to me, it was before the second quarter. It was that shift at the end of the first quarter. And you just alluded to it, Darius, but where things shifted. Up to that point, I remember texting the two of you, and we were kind of going back and forth and being like, good start, you know, good energy. Right. Even with some miscues, mm-hmm. like Vanderbilt traveled when he could have just had a layup. Then he made a play in the other end where he just kind of like knocked the ball out of bounds. There were a couple things like that. Like Troy Brown was getting beat off the dribble by Levine, something that was going to continue to be a problem. Levine was just sort of doing what he wanted. And yet they were up 21-19 when AD went out for the first time. And Drummond checks in and pretty quickly starts to kick the Lakers' ass inside. And it wasn't just that. It was just like the decision to go with a smaller group and a smaller rotation and be playing, you know, Beasley next to Walker, no Rui Hachimura, and just not a lot of help on the inside for Wenyen, who isn't really, as we've talked about, he's more of a forward body that's just taller than a center, and just sort of seeding that ground. I thought changed the whole tone of the game. So instead of, they go from being up two to down three, and then Chicago just bursts out of the gates in the second quarter, and the Lakers have to call the early timeout. So that, to me, that was the game. Like, there were other times where Chicago also put it on the Lakers, but that sort of, Pete, I'll stop there because I do have some thoughts about why I think it'll be different or it could be different moving forward. But that to me was the part of the game where the Lakers let go of the rope, and in doing so in a critical game like this, is just very costly. You know, it's not the actual play-in game or an actual playoff game, but a loss like that, much like the Dallas loss, that can lead to a whole different set of circumstances in terms of the standings and not having the type of advantage that maybe the Lakers could have had, were they able to, you know, go 4-1 instead of 3-2.
Yeah, let's zero in on that stretch, on that minus 12 in the first 5:30 of the second quarter, because I think there's a lot of meat on that bone. So first of all, one of the extremely unusual parts of that game is LeBron James came off of the bench for only the second time in his career. And so the rotation, what I think they were going for, I have no sourcing on this or anything like that, but was... Ideally, you don't want to play LeBron, right, like 36 minutes when he comes back, right? But since it's an important game, you probably do want him to close. So I suspect that him playing like the last 6 minutes of every quarter was, you know, something along the lines of the plan. But he comes in at that time and he ends his shift at the end of the second quarter. Now, normally he would be in at the beginning of the wraparound right there, right? Because AD's been playing, his shifts have been extended recently to around the 1 or 2 minute mark of the first quarter. And then he'll sit until what, like the 7 minute mark of the second quarter. And so that's the main stretch that we're talking about. Due to the unusual circumstances of LeBron's rotational minutes, he's out during that time. So the lineup we have on the floor is Austin, Malik, Lonnie, Vanderbilt, and Wenyen. And especially the first four guys there, like I said, there's a lot of meat on the bone. So Austin's your lead guard in that situation. One of the things he struggles with is physical ball pressure. This is what I refer to as the pass rush of the NBA, as though it were the NFL, right? The Bulls have really good ball pressure from their guards between Pat Bev, Alex Caruso, and Ayo Dosunmu, who's very good at this as well. Kobe White can do this as well, especially if he's like your fourth best guy at doing it. And so they're pressuring up on him, But also Drummond is one of those bigs that likes to jump passing lanes. He's always amongst the league leaders of steals at the five spot, despite how big he is. On that play where AD jammed his finger, for example, that was him blowing up an off-ball screen and fighting over the top to kind of get that deflection right there. So anyway, you've got a lot of this pressure going forward. And so that really plays on Austin's weaknesses. And so over the next couple of days, Austin had a bad weekend. And I think that we'll get into some of the details of that because it was both physical and mental, I thought. Then the Beasley and Lonnie combo. For me, I'll stop on Beasley. It's not about his shot making as much to me. Like, he's not a knockdown open three maker. He's more of a guy that can get up volume at a decent percentage. But for me, it's way more about like things like transition defense and just like running, putting a body on somebody. That said, if you're asking him to put a body on Andre Drummond, it's just not going to work, right? Like, so just the basic idea of how small that group is, it makes Vanderbilt be a big D, right? It's like a lot of the things that we've talked about that we know don't work. And so just in an overall concept type of way, the start of that quarter were like a lot of the things that we're bad at, and we should know we're bad at by now. And we should know not to put a group like that out there.
I don't want to be overly critical, but the thing that irritated me the most is like Lonnie got a lot of praise after the last game for being professional and for handling his business. I thought that praise was just due, but the praise that I thought actually that just needed to happen was this dude scored 20 points on 7 of 12 shooting after not playing for a long time. And so what a great performance. We really needed that. Things probably should have been skewed more towards that than like, oh my goodness, what a great professional. Like, he's a pro. Like, I appreciate Lonnie for playing the way that he did. I think, though, that springboarding that into you're now in the rotation for a game. Right. And this other player who Rui been playing fine. And I thought,
yeah.
Like, his box score numbers had been down, but the OKC game, for example, there were, I don't want to amplify this too much, but there were at least two possessions, and I want to say three or more, where he got matched up with wing Jalen Williams, and Williams had been having his way on a few different drives just to the basket. Like, he ate up Austin on a drive. He went, like, I think he shouldered Troy once or twice, and he was just doing his thing. And a couple times he got matched up with Rui, and he tried that same thing on Rui, and it just didn't work. Like, yeah. Rui's just bigger and stronger, and you don't have to be great at something. Like, I've always talked about this with, like, the difference between how Luka Doncic is bad on defense and Trae Young is bad on defense. Well, Luka's 6'7", 240. If you're bad on defense that way, if a guy just runs into you, it's different than running into a guy who is 6'1", 185 pounds, right?
The point is size and athletic tools matter, right? Like, yes. It's something that it impacts the game. And one of the challenges for any particular shift is you got to be able to identify when there's a big mismatch. And so, like, the Drummond was plus 20 in that game in like 17 minutes. And the reason being, he's a huge mismatch in like one-on-one rebounding battles, even for an Anthony Davis, right? Totally. So if we're talking, if Wenyan's in the game, like, and it's just Wenyan, we've been talking about the AD-Wenyan combo. They didn't get any minutes together. That probably changes when LeBron comes back. But again, it's this whole Rui being benched. It's this whole diminishment of the value of size, which to me is ironic because Darvin Ham was a 6'8 athlete, you know, with size at the four spot. And that's often a spot that we're like, you need help on a guy like Drummond from a second guy. And how many boards is a guy like Rui tipped away? And if you look at his, I don't know, like those type of lineups, we need more size out there to be able to compete with guys like Drummond who can make an impact on the inside.
Yeah. And I think that at this point of the season, you know, I don't know how that fundamentally changes when it's been something that this is just how they played in the kind of the personnel groupings that the coaches have looked for pretty much throughout the season. And there are some reasons for that. I guess it tends to be more offensive and just like the opting for certain levels of spacing and certain levels of creation and whatnot. And I think that we've seen more of the drawbacks. And, you know, part of that also is because there isn't that additional sort of pure big even available in the rotation. And like thinking back to Milwaukee, almost, you know, AD in some senses is like some combo of Brook Lopez and Giannis defensively, where he's more of a pure dropping, like shot blocking, protecting five than Giannis is. But he's obviously much more versatile than Brook Lopez and can do a lot more. But they don't have the Brook Lopez spot unless Mo Bamba comes back and they start starting him. And then that changes the whole thing. That changes what Anthony Davis is doing. I don't think that's going to happen at this point. AD's obviously going to keep starting at the five. So I'm Pete and Darius now thinking more about, well, they've had that one game with D'Angelo Russell and LeBron in the starting lineup together next to AD. And how does that affect what these groupings are? How much does that change the, like, having basically both Dennis and Austin on the floor is no longer going to happen? That's going to be staggered more, like Dennis would be coming off the bench. Austin is now, as Darvin said yesterday, going to continue to start instead of Beasley. So what grouping, that, like, who do you then pair off the bench next to Dennis? And I don't think that it can be Beasley and Walker. And it would seem the guy that they've been choosing between those two has been Beasley, even if that's another thing that we can discuss. But I don't know that it can be both of them. But if you're then also, either if Bamba comes back and then you've still got Wenyen Gabriel and you've still got Rui Hachimura, there's a lot of good options there to be bigger than with that unit than certainly what we saw in this time in this game. And I wonder that just Russell coming back alone, I wonder if some of that slots in a different way, because I don't think it's just going to happen organically based on what we've seen all season.
Yeah, D'Lo definitely has to play. But to the point of like going super small, especially at the 1-2-3, for the sake of improving spacing and offense, like Rui's not a, doesn't hurt your offense. Rui's a good offensive player, and he's very good at the, like, either catch and shoot the wide open three or attack the closeout. He's got one of the best one dribble pull-ups in the game. He's not somebody that, like, oh, we got Rui Hachimura in the game, you know, we're really going to be bad on offense. In fact, on that group, the Vanderbilt and Gabriel and Wenyen combo has been the one that's bad on offense, and it makes sense. They're not neither one of them is particularly skilled, right, in terms of shot making and things like that. So I don't know, D, it's like it's out of whack in ways that, yes, D'Lo needs to play, but like it did need to be that.
Yeah, I was thinking if Russell plays yesterday, like maybe it changes the outcome of like of the game. Dennis didn't shoot particularly well, for example, and the Lakers didn't get a lot of offensive production from any of the other guards. Like Beasley ended up with a good night. He got a lot of points in garbage time. Like, I don't count those personally. Like, and I like you said, Pete, and I think this is super important because I saw some stuff trending on Twitter a little bit where Beasley had ended up like pinning a comment like on his Instagram page where he was like, you know, like wishing his son a happy birthday. And then
right.
fans are in his comments saying
it sucks.
Yeah. Like fans are in his comments about his shot making.
Stop doing that shit.
Totally. But personally, I don't care about his shot making.
Right. Same. Run back on defense.
I don't care about his shot making. Like, yes, I'd like them to go in. Just like I'd like Dennis's shots to go in. Just like LeBron took like a momentum three and that didn't go in. And I was just like, did you need that shot? Like, there are so many times where I want every shot to go in. And if you're a shooter and they don't go in, it's just like make or miss league. I get it. The things that bothered me yesterday, and when I talk about playing an extra guard, it's all of the stuff where continuing to play an extra guard instead of playing an extra forward, that's a choice. Every day, with every game, if you decide I'm going to play one fewer forward and one more guard, that's a choice. And you will either benefit or suffer based off of that choice. And against the Bulls, specifically, they suffered because of that choice. And when you talk about learning the lessons from a game, Pete, maybe I'm seeing what I want to see, but over the course of the season, I think the Lakers have not benefited enough from playing the extra guard rather than playing the extra forward. Earlier during the season, I understand there were mitigating circumstances. There was not always an extra forward available to play. Now there are. And after the game, Darvin Ham said, "We got too many good players. Sometimes one of them isn't going to play." And great, I get it. You think all of these players are good, and to a certain extent, I agree. The one who did not play was the extra forward, and continuing to make that choice with this group, I think you're going to suffer the consequences more often than not, particularly defensively and on the backboards, and it's showing itself over and over and over again. And when they go into this road trip, these are the teams that will punish you for doing that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Anthony Davis, 8 shot attempts. The shot attempts were distributed pretty evenly. After the game, they were talking about... AD was talking about in particular Chicago being a pack the paint team. Now, this is something that LeBron is getting his feet wet. It's funny, we've barely talked about him in his return. To me, this is a game where he's just getting back into the rhythm. I don't really put a ton into it. We were like a +4 when he was in the game. I thought he played okay. But AD against teams that really shut down the paint, Mike, to me, that's where his jump shooting needs to come into play, right? That's something that in previous years, that's not the first time teams have tried to do that against him. But even if it's just that 18 footer, I'm not even talking threes, but like, oh, everybody wants to be in the paint. When he's bullying a team like OKC, that's a team with, you know, slight guys in the front court that aren't really going to be physical with him. He's not going to be able to do that against Andre Drummond. Wasn't able to do that yesterday. Won't be able to do that later. Vucevic getting ejected probably helped Chicago in this respect because he can kind of leverage his physical advantages over him. But to me, that's something that if we want to get AD shot attempts up.
I was annoyed. Yeah. From the Lakers perspective, when Vucevic got sent out, I was like, oh man.
You said it right away.
Yeah,
you texted us right away. He was like, actually, that might not be good for us. And that's exactly what happened, right? And so, to me, Mike, I'm curious your thoughts on that, right? Because, like, AD doesn't have that natural advantage down low against a Chicago team that's also going to be really over-indexing on that. So, just curious your thoughts on AD's shot attempts.
Well, I think this is a complicated one. I think I start that the offense seems to be more guard-centric. Just in general, and a lot of the stuff that like where AD would be aggressive is the downhill and the screen roll. And guess what teams are selling out to take away? You know, that lob,
right?
And him getting to the hoop. And so it just creates these, there's only so many pockets on the floor that AD can get the ball in. And then when he does, it's that same thing. Like he might look up and see a certain defender that he knows he can eat on, even though he can, you know, there isn't really a defender that he can't do something on, and get into that real aggressive mode. And he was great at that against OKC. And there are other games where he's done it early, but then faded away. And I just think that the Lakers have so many guards that put the ball on the floor a lot that it sometimes that just ends up being what the offense is. And AD is not he's not going to demand always and be a super selfish type of a player. And then all of a sudden he's got 6 shot attempts by the third quarter. I think that LeBron coming back helps some of that. Like LeBron is better in the screen role at getting AD the ball in certain places. Maybe that's not the primary, like Russell has yet to really figure that out with AD. Right. And I don't know if Dennis has ever fully figured that out. And
they're much better than they were in 2021. Their numbers together are decent too.
They're, and especially since in the more recent stretch, right? Like there was the game where D'Lo was not, where AD was not getting the ball, and then Darvin put Dennis in and he immediately got him for the two, for like one lob and then another touch in the middle of the paint. But so that's part of it. Like it's part of it's on AD, part of it's on his teammates, part of it's on the coaches, all that stuff. There's plenty of stuff there. Your point about the jump shooting, I think makes some sense too, but I'm now just, I'm trying to think about what it's going to look like when the offensive set around him or the players around him are actually optimized for what this roster is. And that hasn't happened a ton this year. Early in the season, right? It was like when Westbrook was still here, and now it's, and Beverly was in the starting lineup, right? Who's not going to run screen rolls with AD. And then LeBron gets hurt and blah, blah, blah. We've all seen certainly what's happened with this season, but how does that change if it is Russell and it is Austin Reeves and it is LeBron James, like those three on the court, and then presumably Vanderbilt in the dunker spot or like outside of the actions or cutting along the baseline? How does that evolve what we've seen from AD? And I don't know that it's going to be some wholesale change, but that's maybe Darius can tell us.
So I remain baffled by the idea that the Lakers are running some seemingly egalitarian offense where the guards have the green light to shoot as much as they want to shoot on shots that are being opened up by the fact that Anthony Davis is on the floor. Anthony Davis made 75% of his field goal attempts yesterday, and he got eight shot attempts.
Amen.
Some of that's on AD for sure. Mm-hmm. There was a play on the baseline where the ball swung from one side of the court to the other. So AD went from strong side to weak side. And the ball's in the corner, and AD had the opportunity to duck in along underneath the basket in order to get the ball, and he didn't. He stood. Mm-hmm. And then
yes,
the guard drove baseline, and I think he shot a floater. I don't even know if the shot went in or not. It doesn't matter. On plays like that, I'm just like, nah, man. Like, Anthony Davis, you need to duck in. Like, that's mm-hmm. where I blame AD. I'm mm-hmm. like, look, man, like, you got to be more aggressive in getting yourself into position in order to take and make, in order to be available to take and make shots. You're the best player on the court for both teams, right? And then there are other times where I'm just like, and this is going to sound like I'm picking on Beasley, but this will be true for Lonnie. To a certain extent, it's even true for Austin and Dennis, right? Because every guard does this. An action comes for them to come off of a screen or come off of a ball screen, and their first instinct is, what can I do to attack for me? And like, for all the crap that we gave Russell Westbrook, and
yep,
we gave him a lot of crap, one of the things that Russ did fairly consistently is when I'm coming off a ball screen, I'm just looking to attack and compromise the defense. And when the defense gets compromised, I'm looking for Anthony Davis, right? And there is not a guard on the team right now whose first instinct is, I'm yep. looking for Anthony Davis coming off of this ball screen, not even Austin Reeves,
yep.
right? Now, to be fair, defenses are trying to take AD away, and they are packing the paint. Right. But the willingness for all parties on the Lakers, all parties, this is on AD, it's on the guards, it's even on Darvin, to basically be like, oh, you're taking that away, I will happily go to something else. Darvin even said this post game the other day. He's just like, oh, well, the team is taking this other thing away. I'll happily go swing and create another shot for a guard because that's a good look for us. And I'm just like, sure. Is it as good a look as getting Anthony Davis the ball? Because I don't think it is.
Yeah.
I actually don't think it is.
It's such a good point that you're making, though, because you're just essentially giving in to the other game plan then instead of just working a little bit more to get to what it benefits you better, which is Anthony Davis.
If everybody is equally good, this is a great idea. Or if they're roughly equivalent, it's funny because this is the exact system they ran. The Atlanta teams that had Millsap and Horford and like the five really good players, you know?
Oh, the like perfect. My whole team is the all-star team?
Right.
Like that group?
That's awesome. That approach is awesome. But like, you got Anthony Davis on your team.
The whole thing of like, take what the defense gives you. Sure. Yeah. that's coach speak. Like, I heard Kobe Bryant say, just being patient, just taking what the defense gives me. It's just like, no, you weren't. Don't lie. I watched you for 2 decades. No, seriously.
No, like, I feel this.
Come on, man. Like, that's things that people say in order to not sound like selfish or to not sound like they're being an arrogant jerk, basically. Like, no one wants to hear the player come out and say, nope, did what I wanted. They tried to do this other thing. They're not good enough to stop me from doing the thing that I want to do. They'll talk like that during the games to each other, right? You'll see Steph Curry tell a dude during the game, like shimmy and then say something under his breath right to a defender. And then after the game, he'll be like, oh, well, you know, just working off my teammates and,
yeah,
you know, all credit due to them. It's just like, no, yeah. there's a thing that happens between the lines and there's a thing that happens after the game where you're talking to all of the reporters where you're on the record. And the point that you said, Mike, about like giving in to what the defense is doing, like that's a win. Every single time the Lakers decide we'd rather have guard X shoot an 18-footer, right, rather than work in order to try to run actions to get AD the ball, like, that's a win. AD should be touching the ball on 75 or 80% of the possessions that he's in the game. He just should. Good things happen when he touches the ball.
And just to add another thing that I think fits into this, that there's this whole attitude, and I think the first time that I heard it a lot was Mike D'Antoni, and just essentially encouraging guys to always shoot. And if you're open, shoot. And I just have always thought that there is a limit to that, and it doesn't always work. And like the ultimate green light type thing, like for a defense, there are certain shots that you're more than happy, even to a good shooter, you're more than happy that they take. And it's like a rushed early shot clock, run into three, possession dead, transition opportunity the other way. And I think that there are some guys on every team, but certainly on the Lakers right now that are like, think that that's a good shot for them. And it's not a good shot. It's not, but that's not being discussed that it's not. Especially as you guys said, when you have better options and better advantages on the floor. And it's just, this is where we were, Pete, what was the topic when we're trying to figure out the difference between like the smart guys, but sometimes like a team that isn't making the right basketball decisions. So like a lot of guys that have high basketball IQ, which the Lakers do have, but yet like the way that shots are coming about and distributed are not.
This was Darius, and I, forgive me, I'm going to tell it even though it's yours, D, is the, like, the smart kids, but the smart asses in the back of the classroom.
Yeah.
Sitting next to each other. It's very much that type of, like, they'll ace the tests, right? Like, and God, fingers crossed, like, we'll see. We got some tests coming up, but, you know, they might be messing around for parts of the class, right? And so that's certainly the case, Mike, right? But to me, there's a practical basketball thing that adds to this that's on AD as well, is that I think his shot attempts would go up by like a third, maybe 40% if he just popped into the open space, right? Like, yeah. Teams are so overcommitting to this, and he's been so good at that shot. And again, I'm not just talking threes, although I'd love for him to take like three threes a game, if nothing but to keep them honest and start pulling guys out of the paint so that he can get more lanes to the basket, right? Like, that, just that right there, D, it's something that he hasn't done much really since the 2021 season, right after we won the championship at the beginning of that year. And I love that his numbers that are at a career high in terms of his field goal percentage and all of that. But I think the field goal attempts are down, or we've seen this over and over this season, in large part just because he's not popping into the open space.
100%. And so this is why there is no one area where you're just like, aha, it's your fault, right?
Right.
Like, it's everyone's fault.
Great with that. Yeah.
No, it's everyone's fault. Like, AD needs to be better at his decision-making as well, like how quick he's going, what types of shots that he's determining are good shots versus bad shots. And the coaches need to continue to explore ways in order to get him open and on the move to when he's catching the ball. And the guards and the ball handlers, they need to be looking for him more. And like the Lakers have been an interesting like turnover team. There was a stretch there where it's just like, remember earlier this season, they had that game where they had like one turnover or no turnovers. Uh-huh. It was like a crazy game, right? And so they had like a month long stretch where they didn't turn the ball over at all. And then they had stretches where just they're like one of the bottom five turnover teams in the entire league. And so they oscillate a bunch with this. And they were bad against the Bulls in terms of turnovers, and the Bulls punished them in terms of points off of turnovers.
A lot of them were pick sixes, right? These are live ball turnovers, not just like I threw the ball out of bounds, but it's a 2-on-1 going the other way, and that's freaking Zach LaVine filling the lane. It's just easy points.
100%. And so, like, but I wouldn't mind them trying to get the ball to AD more. Not, and this is where the types of, so there's two types of passes to Anthony Davis. The we're all moving together and we're downhill and I'm trying to force it to you. Those are often bad passes because the ease in which, or the risk to reward ratio is just off, right? Like I'm moving, he's moving, the defense is all collapsing, let me try to rush the ball in there, right? But there are other times where AD is just sort of like underneath the basket or around the basket, and he's the, it's him and his own man. And there are times where I just wish like, oh, like, can we just Megatron you the ball right now? Like, can we just like throw it up like you're Randy Moss to make a Mike Vikings connection where it's just like, here's Dante Culpepper to Moss. Like, I'm just heaving it up there for
you. There were a couple of possessions where he's got like Pat Bev and Alex Caruso, and God love them, right? Like they're like way shorter than him. Just throw it up there. But that's one of the things that we don't always see that pass.
No, we don't, because the guards on this team have it, they are conditioned to sort of like that the offense is, and they're not wrong. The offense is built for them.
It is.
Like I've said this a bunch of times, but the offense is built for them.
And so I'm just thinking though, if everybody is available, and we're kind of still waiting for an update on Bamba at some point, and then that we'll get back to that sort of Bamba versus Wenyan. It seems like choice, but it's going to have to be Beasley or Walker. And the starting lineup, if it's going to be Austin and D'Lo in the backcourt and LeBron and then Vanderbilt along with AD, it does seem like that's a lot of skill in around Anthony Davis that should enable some actions more. And if not, then those actions can be punished in a different way with D'Lo and Austin on opposite sides of the court and then wherever LeBron wants to be, which could be in any one of the places. He's good from everywhere. So I'm wondering how much of this stuff like can get taken care of with that group, and also lamenting that they've had so little time that to sort of figure that out. And then what does that do to the bench rotation? And how much can you just increase the minutes for LeBron, Austin, D'Lo, and then not need as much from that bench and just do a little bit more staggering and maybe get some more just bigger defense, defensive type players? Like my perfect world would be moving Troy to the two. Off of that second unit. So it's like Dennis and Troy and then Rui and, you know, either Bamba or Wenyan like that, and just be bigger. I get that it's sacrificing some shooting, but this specific team and the way that I've seen them in different games, like get their ass kicked, it's been more because of the a lack of energy or a lack of size or a lack of defense than it has been by like missing open shots.
Yep.
Especially when they have enough guys that are just creative and good enough at breaking defense down.
Yep.
And getting good shots. So that's the makeup that I wish they had some more time to explore.
You know who's going to help us size up and break the defense down off of the dribble quite a bit? LeBron James, who we barely talked about today, but tomorrow we will. Tomorrow we will. LeBron made a surprise return. We'll discuss his return for this upcoming road trip tomorrow here on the Laker Film Room podcast.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.